Hello, everyone, and welcome to McGill Care's webcast series, Supporting Family and Informal Caregivers. I'm Claire Webster, a former caregiver, certified dementia care consultant, and founder of McGill University's Dementia Education Program. I work with a dynamic team of leading healthcare professionals to oversee the program, who include Dr. José Moret from the Division of Geriatric Medicine, and Dr. Serge Gauthier, Professor Emeritus, formerly of the McGill University Research Center for Studies in Aging. McGill Cares is supported by the Amelia Saputo Community Outreach for Dementia Care. So the McGill Dementia Education Program offers a comprehensive range of free resources to educate and support persons living with dementia, family and informal caregivers, healthcare professionals, medical students, and the public at large. One of our most important resources is our Dementia Companion Guide, which is now available in over 10 different languages. You can download it for free at mcgill.ca/dementia, and printed copies are available on Amazon at a cost of $20, and proceeds go to support our program. And it's a truly amazing comprehensive guide, so I encourage everyone to obtain a copy if you can. Our topic today is sex and gender differences in brain aging and memory. My guest is Professor Natasha Raja, full professor and assistant vice dean, academic affairs at the McGill University Faculty of Medicine and Health Sciences and the Douglas Research Center. She conducts sex and gender research in the cognitive neuroscience of memory, aging, and dementia prevention. She also studies how biological sex assigned at birth, gender, and social determinants of health affect brain health and memory over the adult's lifespan. Professor Raja will talk about the differences between how men and women's brain age and the implications in terms of developing Alzheimer's disease. Welcome to McGill Cares.
Hey, thank you so much for the invitation to present my work, and it's nice to meet you, Claire. And I hope you learn something in what I talk about in the next few minutes. Okay. So today I'll talk to you about some recent work in my lab that's looking at the effect of biological sex and menopause on episodic memory-related brain function in the adult lifespan. So I'll first introduce some concepts to you. What is episodic memory? Why is it important? And then what we know a bit about how episodic memory decline occurs across the adult lifespan. And then I'll talk to you about why it's important to consider sex and how we kind of got into the field of studying sex differences in brain aging, and talk a bit more about our emerging interest in understanding how menopause influences brain aging and cognition at the midlife life trajectory of females. So first, I want to acknowledge my lab and my funders and my collaborators, who, without whom the research I'm presenting to you today wouldn't have been possible. So thank you to them for all their hard work. So episodic memory is what a lot of people consider their day-to-day memory. So it's our memory for our past in rich spatial and temporal contextual detail. So for example, it's remembering what you ate for breakfast today. Where did you park your car in the parking lot today? So it's these really detailed aspects of your personal past and your ability to remember them and consciously recollect them. So to be able to verbalize them and tell somebody about what you did. And the reason this type of memory is very interesting to study is because it is one of the first signs of Alzheimer's disease. But it is also a sign of normative aging. So one of the trickiest things that we face as cognitive neuroscientists and neuropsychologists is trying to understand, well, what is normative episodic memory decline, so indicative of just normative aging, and then when is it problematic as we age, and when might it be a sign of early Alzheimer's disease? And so what we know is that in normative aging, you see a decline in context memory, so the ability to remember spatial and temporal and those kind of perceptual details about past events, but you tend to maintain the ability to recognize past events. So if someone said, do you remember seeing this face? You'd remember seeing the face, but you might not remember where you saw that face or in which order you saw faces. So that is what happens in normative aging in general. However, in Alzheimer's disease, one of the earliest signs is not only the inability to remember the contextual details, but also an increase in the ability to have deficits in recognition. So an inability to recognize individuals that you've seen in the past or recognize that that's your car or that's your house. So it really is a shift in the type of episodic memory that you see a decline in. you also see an increase in the inability to differentiate between novel and new and old information. So for example, if you see a list of words and you're asked to say which is old and which is new, you're more likely to endorse new as old and vice versa. And that's basically an indication of the inability to kind of, again, recognize and differentiate novelty from previously encountered events. So episodic memory is a really interesting concept in the cognitive neurosciences because it really is fundamental to who we are as humans. Without our ability to remember the past, we would not really have a strong concept of who we are. We wouldn't be able to plan what we want to do tomorrow. And so deficits in this domain, both in normative aging and in Alzheimer's disease, really impact the quality of life of older adults and really is one of the primary concerns that older adults kind of present with in the lab when they come in. So here are some results from a study that was conducted in my lab between 2013 and 2018 and led by my former student, Lizzie Yankudovich, in which we wanted to study when does episodic memory decline emerge in the adult lifespan. And we focused on memory for spatial and temporal contextual details because that is what is present in the normative aging population. And so we studied individuals in both the MRI scanner and also behaviorally. We had adults between the ages of 19 to 79 come in, and they came into our MRI scanner and they were asked to encode a series of faces. These were age variant black and white faces, so children all the way up to seniors that were presented to the left and the right. And they were instructed to memorize the face and its spatial location, or memorize the faces and their temporal orders, the order in which they saw the face. And after a break, they were presented with two faces. They had seen both of these two faces. So this is not a recognition memory paradigm. It's a context memory paradigm. And they were asked to say which of these two faces were either originally presented to the left or the right, or which of these two faces was originally presented more or least recently. So it was a test of spatial and temporal contextual details. But what we saw is that there is a linear decline in this ability from the age of 19 all the way up to 79. However, when you look at the midlife range, you really see an increase in spread. So there really is an increased variability at midlife in individual differences in the ability to do these types of contextual memory tasks. And when we kind of looked at this data, we left it at that, but there's an increased variability and maybe midlife is a critical period in the phase. And we really didn't consider to look at sex differences initially. And why is that? And indeed, most researchers in my field have not considered if there's sex differences in how individuals age, in their memory abilities, and in the neural correlates of that change with age. And the reason for that is because when you look behaviorally at the profiles across the adult lifespan, females and males show similar declines. So behaviorally, males and females show similar declines in normative aging, in episodic memory decline. Now, there is some data indicating that the rate of decline might be increased in females, and that might especially be true for females with higher risk factors for Alzheimer's disease. But in normative aging, there's very little difference in how males and females behave across the adult lifespan. And so why would you, you know, think maybe the brain mechanisms of this decline are different? Well, one important thing to keep in mind is even in the presence of comparable task performance in females and males, it might be that the underlying brain mechanisms that are going wrong with age differ. So on the surface, you might look like you're behaving the same and you're declining for the same reasons as males and females. But when you look under the hood and you look at what the brain is doing and what is differing across the adult lifespan with age in males and females, the neural mechanisms of that decline might be very different. And so because of the emerging evidence that there is a higher prevalence of Alzheimer's disease in females compared to males, and we did have some individuals in the study that had a family history of Alzheimer's disease, we decided to ask the question, well, maybe there are sex differences present in this normative population. So remember, these are adults that are aging well, that are maintaining their cognition across the adult lifespan. They are not at early stages of Alzheimer's disease. So this is just normative aging that we're looking at. And so to do this, one of my former students, Savanya Subramaniapillai, took the data from the Montreal Adult Lifespan Study. And what she did was she age matched and education matched males and females. And the reason that that's important is because There is a presence of sex differences in educational attainment, especially in the older adult cohort. And so you want to control for the fact that perhaps any sort of differences you're observing is because of differences in opportunity across the adult lifespan in education and occupational complexity. And so we matched our males and females in both age and education. And then we looked at the behavior again, and you see the same, you know, linear decline in males and females in this kind of narrowed sample of our original study. And then we used a brain imaging analysis technique called partially scores. And the reason this is important to know is because it's a totally agnostic approach to the science. So we're not going in with any hypothesis. We're not trying to fit the data to any regression. We really just want to know whether or not the brain mechanisms contributing to this decline are different in the two sexes. And it's a data-driven multivariate imaging method. And so using this tool, I want to orient you to this slide because you probably haven't seen something like this before. This is the results of an fMRI analysis of that task I just described. So we're looking at what areas of the brain are active when individuals successfully encode an event. So, you know, they later remembered the spatial location of the event and then successfully retrieved the event. So they made an accurate retrieval judgment that the face was on the left or the right. And on top, you see the males and the females. And then on the bottom, this is the accuracy-related correlation. And in the above is the age-related correlation. And here are the brain regions that are implicated. So this is the brain, if you're viewing it from the left side. This is the brain, if you're viewing it on the right side. This is the lateral surface, so the outer part of the brain. And this is the medial surface, if you were to cut the brain in the middle. And what you'll notice is that there's a large swath of activation that spans the frontal lobes all the way to the parietal lobes. So this is the frontal parietal cognitive control network, and it's very much implicated in episodic memory. And when you look at the performance effects in males and females, you see some overlap. So both males and females engage these regions to successfully encode these spatial locations of faces. Females engage them at retrieval. And so there are overlaps in the performance-related activations in males and females. So when they're doing the task well, they're using similar regions in a similar way. But when you look at the age effects, that's when you notice the difference. So in females, you see an age effect in these regions. In males, it's flatline. So these areas in females are more active in older females relative to young females. So with advanced age, you tend to increase activation in these regions. And it helps them to some extent. So in a very challenging spatial task, which we call the spatial hard task, females that engaged these regions performed better. And they tend to increase engagement with advanced age. Unfortunately, at retrieval, engagement of these regions supports memory, but older females do not engage these regions. So what an important thing to note is, so these are frontal parietal regions, very important for cognitive control, planning, your future, organizing your day-to-day activation, day-to-day behaviors. And what we're seeing is that age-related differences in this system seem to be specific to females compared to males. And that's a really interesting finding because we've seen this consistently across a lot of adult aging studies, this increased activation in this network. So it's nice to know that, oh, this might be driven by the females in those samples. Now, when we didn't disaggregate our data by sex, we saw a similar pattern, but we didn't see that at encoding, it supported memory. So only by disaggregating by sex do we see that we do see an age-related increase in these activations at encoding. It's specific to females, and it seems to support their memory. So it's very important to look at these sex differences, to see these subtle differences in what type of mechanisms might be supporting and hindering performance with advanced age in males versus females. Now, we saw several other results from this reanalysis with sex, and I'm not going to go into detail about them, but I want you to note that performance-wise, you know, there's a lot of overlap. So when you're doing well, males and females really do engage similar regions. And that tends to be when you're younger. But as you age, the reason for why you're showing these memory failures with age seem to consistently be different in males versus females. Age effect is consistently going in the opposite direction in this study. And so what we concluded is that even in the presence of no sex differences in memory performance across the adult lifespan, we see that females and males exhibit similarities in performance-related activation. So when you're doing well for the same reasons, whether you're female or male. However, when you start to show age-related declines in this type of memory, the reason for that age-related decline is different, with females showing specific age-related increases in frontal parietal activation at encoding, which may be compensatory. And this has significant clinical implications because, as I mentioned, there's a higher prevalence of Alzheimer's disease in females compared to males, and a higher prevalence of Parkinson's in males compared to females. And these types of memory deficits and executive function deficits emerge in both these diseases at different stages. And so knowing why that might occur and what neural mechanisms might underlie that memory decline and whether it differs in males and females is very important for how you approach the care and what types of cognitive processes you might want to bolster. So in females, you know, from this data, I would think that frontal parietal and cognitive control processes are very important for supporting memory. And we should really try and support that type of processes in females. It doesn't seem to be as implicated in the age effects in males in this sample. So from the study, we also saw, as I mentioned earlier, that there's a lot of variability in memory performance at midlife. And when you look at this data and look at age differences, you see that slope for the rate of decline is greater at midlife compared to young adulthood and older adulthood. And so we were wondering, well, this is interesting. No one's really studied midlife. And it's interesting within the context of Alzheimer's disease because there's a lot of evidence indicating that the neuropathology underlying Alzheimer's disease is actually present decades before the onset of symptoms. And so maybe at midlife, there is something going on in adults who are at greater risk for Alzheimer's disease, and we need to investigate that. Now, of course, when you start to think of midlife and you know that females are more at risk for Alzheimer's disease, you start to consider menopause. Because at midlife, most females experience natural menopause at this time. And so we designed a study called the Brain Health and Midlife and Menopause Study, or BAM study, which is the current directions of the lab. Here are my trainees who are involved with it, Ariel, Sophia, Ricky, and Julia. And this study is really aimed at answering three questions. So this has been funded by the CIHR, and it's funded by my CIHR Sex and Gender Research Chair. And it's an ongoing project that's funded till 2026. And I'm going to show you some preliminary data. But we really are still recruiting for the study. So if you're interested, please do reach out to find out more. So the three questions we want to answer with this study is, are there sex differences in the effective age on the neural correlates of episodic memory at midlife? So we saw in the adult lifespan that it happens across the adult lifespan. Now, if we narrow it down to midlife, do we still see those effects? How do age and menopause effects affect episodic memory and brain function in middle-aged females? So that's the primary question of the study. And the reason for this is because we saw that steep slope, and a lot of our participants were females. So we want to understand, how does endocrinological aging, so endocrine aging, which is the aging of our hormones and our hormonal systems during menopause, interact with what we consider chronological aging? And then we want to understand, how does that differ in individuals with risk factors for Alzheimer's disease? So this really is trying to get at, do females that have a genetic risk factor for Alzheimer's disease or have a family history of Alzheimer's disease experience menopause differently? Because with menopause, there's changes in inflammatory responses, there's changes in vascular function, and all these things have been linked to Alzheimer's disease. And so perhaps how a female experiences and navigates this time is a critical period in which we need to understand and intervene early for those at greater risk. So that's the motivation for this study. Now, it's a large study that includes three different stages: an online enrollment, a first behavioral visit where we do neuropsychological assessment, a bunch of questionnaires to really get to know you. So we ask about your reproductive history, we ask about your childhood experiences. So we really want to deeply phenotype the females that come into our research lab to understand who they are. We have a blood donation, so we look at your hormones, we look at your protein levels and your risk factors for Alzheimer's disease at this stage. And we also put you in a mock scanner to make sure you're not scared of the MRI scanner. A lot of people don't know the MRI scanner can be rather claustrophobic, And so it's important to assess that before you we put you in there for an hour, right? And so if you survive this first session, we then bring you back for another session, the MRI session, where again, we get a blood donation to tie your hormones and protein levels to when you're being scanned. And then we acquire a bunch of structural images that tell us how does the brain's gray and matte white matter change with age, and how does it differentiate between females that are at different stages of menopause. And we also do different types of scans, resting state, task, and diffusion MRI, to look at different aspects of brain aging at this stage. So our recruitment goals are very ambitious. We really want to create a large database of females with and without risk factors for Alzheimer's disease to understand how the female brain ages and understand why females are more at risk for this disease compared to males. We are trying to do a more representative recruitment of diverse individuals. So we're targeting diverse communities to try and get a larger sample from different ethnicities and different cultures that represent Montreal. And so we're doing that. And our recruitment goal really is up to 500 people. Right now we're at 200 and we're going strong, but COVID really did impact the study as it did many human neurologists. So this is just a data of how the flow chart. So we have had 1,400 people approach us about the study, but you can see that it's very hard to get to the final stage of MRI because there is a lot of screening that goes on and we notify you. So if there's anything that needs your attention and you need medical intervention, we recommend you go see a doctor. That's part of our efforts. And so this is the task fMRI portion of the study. So it's similar to what we've done before. And I just want to show you some behavioral data and some touch on some imaging to show you that this is a promising direction that we're going. Right. So this is led by my student, Ariel Krestal. And it's a similar task. Again, face, I love faces. And you know, that you're asked to memorize faces. It's a bit harder because our target population is younger. So we're going only up to the age of 65, so middle age. You're asked to memorize faces in one of four quadrants. So it's a bit tougher than just left and right. And then you see a face in the center and you're asked to say, oh, I remember this face. It was on the top left, top right, bottom left, bottom right. I remember the face, but I don't remember where it was. I don't remember the face, or it's a new face. So those are your types of responses. And here you'll see we've had success in recruiting 31 premenopause, 38 perimenopause, and 55 postmenopause females in the middle age cohort so far that have performed these tasks. We have an easy version where you only see six faces, a hard version where you see 12 faces. And here you can see the behavioral profile. So you really do see that decline that we saw in that first adult lifespan study being represented by endocrine aging. So here you have the premenopause, the perimenopause, and postmenopause females. Now, of course, you know, when you look at this statistically, what we see is that there's a linear decline across the menopause trajectory. But when you include age in the variable, these two things are very interactive. So endocrine aging and chronological aging both contribute to this behavioral effect. And it's hard to really tease them apart. And in females, that makes sense. Like, it's not as though there's two selves, that one is endocrine aging and one is chronological aging. There's one self, and these two things are happening and co-occurring, and they're interacting. So that's how we're thinking about the study, looking at the interaction between chronological and endocrine aging in females. And when we look at the brains of females when they're doing this type of task at midlife, what we notice is that I'll orient you again, here's age, there's successful performance of the left-right decision. This is the brain correlations for just performing the task and saying you remember seeing faces. And here are just pre and postmenopause females. And these are the brain regions that are implicated, which again include the frontal parietal areas and some midline areas that are related to Alzheimer's disease risk. So increased activation in these areas is associated with Alzheimer's disease. And these areas do have tendency to have higher amyloid beta in PET imaging of these systems. So what we notice is that premenopause and postmenopause, you have very similar activations for successful encoding of source memory. So what are the brain regions engaged during successful encoding? It's these regions. And so when you're successfully encoding, you engage these same regions regardless of pre or postmenopause. But where the difference arises is really at retrieval. So remember, in that first study, we also saw something going on at retrieval. We're like, oh, females can engage these regions at encoding and it supports their memory. But engaging these regions at retrieval also helps you perform the task, and older females don't seem to do that. And here we're seeing that that is apparent in midlife, but it's only at postmenopause. So that retrieval-related change in brain function or difference in brain function seems to be implicated in that behavioral decline, and it occurs at postmenopause in females, at midlife. So this is not an older age sample. And so that was really interesting to us because it really highlights how, oh, there is something going on, in not at encoding, but at how you're trying to go at the task afterwards. We also saw an effect that was completely age-related, and it was implicated in a different system. So on top, you'll see there's the age correlations, and this is really related to age in postmenopause. So with increasing age, you see declines in our posterior cortical and occipital cortex regions, which is really implicated in spatial attention and the ability to orient visually. And it's part of also these executive networks. So this seems to be related and more specific to postmenopausal females and implicated in their behavioral differences, but it's more related to the chronological aging. So in the first effect, it wasn't really an age effect. It's more of an endocrine effect. And here we're seeing more of an age effect that's specific to postmenopause, that's more in these visual areas and intentional areas. So this is just to show you that it is a promising direction we're taking to consider endocrine aging compared to chronological aging. We're still increasing our sample size. So if you're interested in this type of work and want to contribute, please do volunteer, because we're trying to recruit individuals with a family history of Alzheimer's disease, because that is a challenging cohort at midlife to recruit. We're all busy at midlife. We have jobs, we have families, we have many demands on our time. So it's been a challenge recruiting this sample. But hopefully some of you in the audience will find this interesting and want to volunteer your time. In the study, you are compensated for your time. You do get to have a cool picture of your brain to take home. So you'll get to see what you look like on the inside, which is, I think, a lot of people enjoy. And so with that, I just want to conclude that what we found, or what we're finding in the study, is that there's encoding-related frontal parietal activity, similar to that adult lifespan study, that's apparent in both pre- and postmenopausal females. So it's nice that totally different paradigm, totally different sample, we're seeing similar effects. So, you know, when you hear about the replication crisis in science, this seems to actually show that this is replicating across different samples. So that's a good thing to find out. But there's retrieval-related differences at postmenopause compared to premenopause, which might underlie the memory differences that we see at that age group. And then these memory differences in frontal parietal activity and encoding is apparent at midlife in females. That's important to consider too, that we're seeing what we saw in the adult lifespan, but at a younger age. So it is happening earlier than we thought. And finally, it really is the take-home message of this talk, and most of the work I'm doing is for scientists out there to really consider biological sex and gender. That's something we're trying to pursue. It's a complicated topic. It's not just gender identity. It's about the gendered life experiences of females, such as the experience of caretaking, the access to education and occupational complexity. So gender is a very complicated variable, and we're grappling with it now to contrast it to biological sex in all your studies. So really consider whether or not, even if behaviorally you don't see differences by sex and gender, that the underlying neural mechanisms might differ, and those differences might be attributable more to endocrine aging relative to chronological aging. So that's something to consider for future research in the area of aging and Alzheimer's disease. So I want to thank you for the invitation to present my work. I hope people have found this interesting and want to volunteer for the BAM study. Thank you.
So thank you so much for this fascinating presentation. And we have a slide here that includes all of the information needed to be able to obtain information about how to register for the clinical trial. We will also be including this information on our trusted resources section of our website, mcgill.ca/dementia. So I have a few questions for you regarding the clinical trial. First of all, I really liked what you said, that as the person is going to be going through the various steps, if you do see something that is abnormal, that you will be flagging it and recommending that people get in touch with, get some medical attention. So what would be some examples of things that you would find that, that would be flagged?
Sure. So in our screening, so in the first session, when people come in and we do a neuropsychological assessment, we also do a psychiatric assessment for depression, for anxiety, and for other psychiatric disorders. And so if we do see that someone is struggling with a mental illness, we will direct them to the right people to contact to get intervention and care. Because not everyone's aware, you know, especially after COVID, not everyone's aware of what is normative depression levels and what, because everyone has level bad days and anxiety here and there, but when is it a problem and when do you need to get care? So we do let you know about that. If you report not having hypertension or cholesterol, so we ask you if you know what you have, and if you report you don't have any of that, and then we detect it, we will let you know. We will let you know and tell you to go see a doctor at that time. And then, unfortunately, this has happened, you know, where people do come into the MRI environment and we do see something. And so the way that we work ethically is when we see something on a scan that we think might be indicative of either a tumor or, you know, something that needs attention, we send it to a neuroradiologist. We don't make the call. I am not a radiologist. I am not an MD. I'm a PhD. So I don't make that call of care. What I do is I recommend. So I will send it to a radiologist. I will make sure, because there's a lot of individual differences in brain structure and function as well. Some of it extremely normative, and someone's just gone through their life not knowing that that's what their brain looks like. And we have to get someone with the expertise to make that decision for us. And so they'll come back to us and let us know if it's an incidental finding that needs to be reported. And so when it is reported, I always phone. I also email, just in case, is depending on the importance of that finding, and ensure that you get the right care. So I make sure that you get the neurological report to your doctor or have it in hand when you go to the emergency room or the CLSC.
I think it's an amazing opportunity to really have a proper assessment, because so many people don't recognize the correlation between our cardiovascular health and our brain health, especially among women, that cardiovascular disease affects women even more than men. And so to have the opportunity to have your blood pressure checked, your cholesterol checked, you know, and if there was a risk that a person was actually or at a high risk for developing Alzheimer's, do you disclose that information to them?
No, we don't. So ethically, because there is no cure for Alzheimer's or a clear treatment that is out there that is positive for everybody, we don't ethically tell you your genetic profile or your risk level. That is something that we actually have in our consent form. And you have to agree to that we're not going to disclose the information to you before you participate. Because some people do want to know, and then they don't want to participate. And that's fair, right? Mm-hmm. But they need to know upfront. And we do have that in our consent form. And I just want to make a clarification that this is not a clinical trial, because we're not doing any intervention on the individual.
Okay.
This is a discovery science. So this is really to understand what is happening at midlife, and if there are sex differences, and how does menopause and risk factors for Alzheimer's disease interact in affecting brain and cognitive health. So that is, and that will inform future studies that may be more clinically oriented with interventions in mind.
So I don't know if you're able to answer this question, but I mean, one of the reasons, or I believe, I'm not a medical doctor either, but one of the reasons why there is cognitive decline in women in menopause is because of the decline in estrogen. Yes. So is there any value for women who are in menopause to take estrogen supplements or estrogen cream? Like, would that help enhance the memory if we take supplements?
This is one of the, this is the most popular question I get asked, right? So I go on HRTs or shouldn't I? And it's a complex answer, and people don't like it because it is very individual. What's happening in the field, and I think in the public, I hope as well, is that we need to pay attention to who we are. There is not a one-size-fits-all answer to that question. It really depends on your personal history. So do you have a history of breast cancer in your family? Do you have a history of ovarian cancer in your family? Were these estrogen-related cancers? which would, you know, probably end up the answer being no, you shouldn't go on these HRTs. And there is evidence from like brain imaging studies done by colleagues of mine, such as Emily Jacobs and Jillian Einstein and Lisa Galea, showing that, you know, the level of estrogen at pre, peri, and postmenopause does correlate with memory function, right? So there is a link between estrogen levels and the decline in estrogen levels and cognitive effects, but there's also so much going on with that decline. So you have sleep disruptions, you have night sweats, you're generally less alert, and you're also at a time in your life where you're extremely, you know, pulled in multiple directions, right? As a female with children and, you know, work. And so there's a lot of things going on. And we all know that sleep deprivation results in a lot of cognitive decline in individuals. So there's something else to consider as well. It might not just be the estrogen. It might be what happens with that estrogen. That's the real culprit in the cognitive effects that you're experiencing. Now, with going on HRTs, that really is what type of HRT is an important decision. Not all HRTs are made the same. Not all HRTs have the same effects on females. I wouldn't recommend just jumping on a bandwagon of taking some vitamins that you see, you know, publicized to you on online or something like that, to really talk to your doctor. Get the advice of your doctor. And if it is, if menopause is creating significant effects, like there's all sorts of other physiological effects that some females occur, experience, you really need to talk to your doctor to get the best care. And you might try different HRTs until you hit one that works for you. Or you might decide the side effects of the HRTs are worse than what you experience every month. And so you kind of give that up and try to, you know, try other things like meditation, yoga, increasing your lifestyle factors like eating well, exercising, not drinking, things like that, that really have benefits as well. So it's something it's a personal decision. Yeah.
Could you repeat again the age group for which you're looking for participants?
Sure. So it's between the age of 40 and 65. Okay. So we're looking at pre-peri. So perimenopause is that transition stage. So when you start to miss your periods, and you start to experience hot flashes, but you're still cycling, right? So, and that could range from 10 to 15 years before you enter menopause. So there's a large period of perimenopause. The average age of menopause is about 52. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we try and capture the range, like a decade around that average age.
Well, I really encourage our viewers to participate in this fascinating study because it's the only way that we can gather data, right? So, you know, for people to volunteer, I know that I will be looking into volunteering because I find it fascinating. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today, Professor Raj. I really appreciate having you as my guest.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So the McGill Dementia Education Program is funded by private donations for which McGill Cares plays a very important role. So if you'd like to contribute to our program or if you would like to have more information about all of our various activities, including the Dementia Companion Guide, please visit us at mcgill.ca/dementia. And if you would like to learn about upcoming episodes of McGill Cares as well as other important program information that we offer, please register for our newsletter at dementia@mcgill.ca. Thank you for watching.